Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 157 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Tracy Desjardins. She is an international health coach, mind-body eating coach, fitness professional, and writer who specializes in holistic wellness coaching for women. Through her own prior struggles with being overweight, dieting, binge eating, sugar addiction, and emotional eating challenges, Tracy shares a compassionate space with other women working through similar trials. Tracy's professional work is centered around helping women discover their very own transformative steps to finding sustainable peace with food, body, and self without restrictive dieting ever again. Tracy is the author of the international best-selling book, The Diet-Free Diva, which is on Amazon and we'll link here for you to order. In her book, Tracy describes her life story as it relates to her battle with dieting and weight loss and offers an effective, groundbreaking approach for healing from emotional eating challenges. Tracy walks readers through 5 steps that help women connect to their inner diva, who they are meant to be when they are not fighting with diets and are living their best version of themselves. Welcome, Tracy. So excited to have you here today.
Yeah. Thank you so much, SIO. It's really an honor to be on your podcast.
Oh, it's just full circle. We were saying before we started recording, I met Tracy through Danielle Dame, and she was just on her podcast. And Tracy actually did some emotion code sessions with me while writing this book, we come to find out. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, but it's just so nice to have you on and share your story with us. So I do have a copy of your book, which is amazing. I really want to say right off the bat, I hope everyone will go out and get a copy. But we're going to definitely dig into some of what's in there today. But I also just want to start because this is always, I get the most feedback from the podcast is from people hearing other people's stories and history. So let's just start, you know, with what got you to the inspiration to write this book and kind of just your own background and story.
Yeah. I'm so happy to share this. And you know, I struggled so much with my relationship with food from an early age, early childhood, that I can't even, still surreal to me that I actually put this book out there, because I really shared what was such a shameful struggle for me is now public to the world. And I feel more fulfilled than ever in my life right now, having put this out there, because I am getting so much feedback from other women that are, you know, connecting with my story and what I share in the healing steps in the book. So I'll just dive back a little bit to give the listeners an idea of who I am and where I come from. And no doubt that I'll probably resonate with many, many other delightful women out there, because, you know, shame with food is something that we don't really talk about a whole lot. So anyway, I was born in 1970 and I always had a sweet tooth as a child. And it was kind of a joke in my family that, you know, watch Tracy around sweets, you know, and I was never satisfied with like just a couple pieces of Halloween candy. Or I remember, you know, even, I mean, like from the earliest age of like four or five going to birthday parties, and I was never satisfied with just my one little cupcake or my one little sliver of birthday cake. I always really, really wanted more. And I couldn't understand why, like my little friends at the little table, you know, they were having a few bites of their cake and they would run off and play. And I would finish my cake and then I would sneak and finish their cake. And like some of the moms would notice and stuff. And I remember having shame around that early on and not really understanding why I wanted so much more and they were okay with just a few bites. So just having said that, I was also that kid that had kind of like a big funny personality. I wasn't I wasn't overly concerned with what I looked like this up until like fifth grade. And, you know, I wore the plus size little girl clothing. And I just remember I was so confident in who I was. I loved to laugh. I was the class clown. And I had this little gift of making friends, just getting along with people and enjoying what was really intrinsically good about life. And I was able to make lemonade out of lemons as a kid. That was before I got kind of pulled into the body image diet culture around the age of 11 or 12, when the hormones start changing for women, for girls. It's a really, if you remember, a really difficult stage, you know, when puberty hits. And I remember it was almost like the flip of a switch. Like I ended fourth grade and I was that just big personality class clown with no issues about my body or my appearance, or even like the thing with sugar. It was just what I did. Yeah, I loved extra cake. And when I got busted eating extra cake, it was like, whatever, give me my roller skates. I'll just go find everybody else and get on with it. But when, there must have been like an age 11 hormonal pretty big tidal wave of change for me, because when I came back to school in fifth grade, I remember all of a sudden I cared about what I looked like physically. My body all of a sudden was not enough in my pretty plus clothes. I started to become ashamed of my chubby body. And I almost had a feeling of, oh my gosh, I don't fit in anymore. Whereas that was never a problem before. All of a sudden, I started to catch on to what boys were interested in and what like the girls ahead of me, a few classes ahead of me were doing. They were wearing the tight jeans and just that whole big wave of what's currently cool. And all of a sudden I formed the limiting belief really quick that I was no longer cool. I had a big mouth. That wasn't right. Nothing about me was fitting in anymore. And I had to change quick. And this was right around 1981, 82. And I started to pay attention to magazine covers and like Charlie's Angels TV shows and like Cheryl Teagues and Christie Brinkley. And I didn't look like any of them, but I felt like they were so admired. And that was like the gold standard of what a woman should look like. We should have curves in the right places. I had curves in the opposite places that that was so admired by society. And it really did a number on my self-esteem. And I'm thinking, like my next book is going to be about body image for women, because that's, it kind of goes in line with the diet free diva. Cause I started to catch on to, wait a minute, all of a sudden my body wasn't good enough to fit in. So I started dieting, Sayo, at age 12, and it wasn't like the commercial based diets. It was my own form of restriction. And by the way, anybody listening, I'm so happy to talk about this one, because a lot of people might be dieting and they don't even realize it. Like, it doesn't mean that you're on like the Jenny Craig diet or the Weight Watchers diet. If you're restricting food on some of your own terms and it's hard to sustain and you always feel like you're starting over on Monday or falling off the wagon and going overboard with so-called forbidden foods, that's dieting. So dieting and any form of restriction is really what I'm polarizing in this book. So here's what happened. So at age 12, I entered the seventh grade and I'm trying to wear all these clothes that really weren't me. Nothing was me. And I was trying to find the me that was going to fit in. I began dieting pretty heavily. I took my free spirit sense of self and I channeled that into, I'm a fighter and I'm going to fit in. I'm going to do whatever it takes to fit in. And it was so sad. I wish I could go back, you know, and I kind of did, you know, many decades later, and kind of rescue that little girl. Like, hey, wait a minute. We are fine as is, but you didn't hear that, right? Thin was in. I mean, you heard it every thin was even from my, you know, my mother was like, thin is in. You need to remember that. And I wasn't built like my mother. And that was just like another challenge for me. So it's kind of like, I kind of had my middle finger up to the world on some respects. And then on the other hand, I was chasing to fit in. Like I was a bit of a fighter and I was going to fit in. So the dieting exasperated my love for sugar. I mean, it happened just like that. I didn't realize what was going on then, but many decades later, I do realize that all of the restriction and all of the food labeling as good or bad, took my early childhood. I do believe I was addicted to sugar early on, because remember, I couldn't get enough cake. I was always sneaking food. I talk about that in my book. And it just blew it through the water. The diet restrict binge, my binge eating on sugar just exploded at the age of like 12, 13. And Sayo, I lived this war, because what we were taught early on in school and in sports, I mean, I tried sports. I wasn't very good at any of them, but you know, I tried. But what I remember is the coach would say, if you fall down, you stand up, you brush yourself off and you keep going. Well, that got in my head with the dieting. Okay, I fell off the wagon. I fell down. I ate all this candy. I'm just going to like keep going. I'm just going to try again. I'm going to work harder at what? I don't know. I'm just going to keep going. And you know, I was like a relatively intelligent person, and I didn't notice that that wasn't working. And I did that for decades. So fast forward, high school was an absolute disaster for me because the binge eating got so out of hand. And then you throw the peer pressure, boyfriend drama, the identity crisis. You know, I wasn't that soccer player. I wasn't that cheerleader. I wasn't that lead vocalist in the school play. I was none of that. I dabbled in all of it. My escape was always sugar. My escape was always sugar. And the harder I dieted, this is great. The harder I dieted, the more weight I put on. And I was always that girl that was like maybe 20 or 30 pounds overweight. Okay. And I was always, you know, I dreaded the doctor's appointments because I got the talk, like, you know, and I'm 5'4". So I was always, you know, pushing the edge of what I should weigh, you know, and that was such cause for concern. And this inner rebel in me just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, I remember as a kid and as a teen, especially anybody out there that saw the movie Forrest Gump, when Forrest Gump finally loses it emotionally, he opens the front door of that house he grew up in with his mother. It may have been when his mother passed away. I forget the part of the movie, but nonetheless, something snaps in Forrest and he opens the front door and he ran and he ran and he ran. He didn't stop running. He ran across the country. I felt like that as a teen, but I didn't know how to channel that energy. And so, you know, life just takes us on and here we go. We just keep moving forward. I went to college and, you know, I had discovered aerobic exercise in high school, actually a little bit earlier than that. And it was really fun. And it was my way of going to the gym that my dad went to. And he said, well, I sign you up for this class. I think you'll like it. I think it's fun. That actually saved my life because it wasn't an organized social sport at school. I was the youngest person in the aerobics class and I didn't know any of those people, but I got to jump up and down all different shapes and sizes. Everybody talked to everybody. And that was like something for me right there. So that turned into my escape from life. I would go and I would do these aerobics classes. And I started to notice, I feel really good when I just jump up and down to great music. And the instructor, her name was Mary at the time, and she was not the skinny little thing that was all the rage on TV. She was kind of the adult version of me in my own skin. Like she was muscular and she could move and she was confident. And there was some energy going on there that I really admired her. And she really did something to my heart. So I became an instructor in college, but and that was during the fat-free phenomenon. So I had friends that lived in the hall with me, you know, some were bulimic and, you know, I thought, wow, this is another crazy thing that dieting did to me. I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but I have to say it because I think a lot of people can resonate with it. Nobody talks about the person that is just binge eating, but not purging and not starving. So I would look at the girls with bulimia mainly. Wow. They had more willpower than me. They were actually getting attention. Wow, look what she's dealing with. She went away for this and that. She came back and she received compassion from her peers. It was like, oh, you have that. There's help. But what about the rest of us that are emotionally binge eating on sugar? We just label ourselves as not having enough willpower and we're just slovenly or something. You know what I mean? There was no help for people like us at the time. So I just exercised harder and harder and harder. I was able to lose the weight at the age 20. When you work out like crazy, you can get away with eating, you know, Captain Crunch and droves and hard pretzels. It, you know, when you're that young and you push yourself so hard with exercise, it kind of sort of worked. I appeared to have slimmed down and we're getting the accolades from people. And I thought, okay, well, this is the answer. But it wasn't at all. but I thought it was moving forward. I graduate college, I get married, have two kids. Then life becomes like jam packed, crazy. And I worked professionally in real estate, and I also taught aerobics on the side, but my sugar binging was still going nuts. And I was trying to use the same tactics that I did in my 20s. My body started to wear down. I started to get tired. Hormones are all over the place. Wasn't working anymore. But I still didn't see the writing on the wall, because I did Weight Watchers with this friend. Then we did paleo. And then I did this 30-day keto thing that damn near killed me. And it always ended bad. It always ended in a binge from hell. And I still never caught on as to why. I just thought that I was losing focus, and I had to just really get in there and get my act together and be more strict, weigh myself more often. It was like the opposite of what I needed, but I didn't know what I didn't know. And that is how I lived my life up until age 49 and a half.
So this is, I love the story so much. I resonate with so much of it, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And even just, I was just thinking about when you were talking about that thin is in messaging. Unfortunately, that's still the messaging we have now, really. You know, when I think about, because my daughter is 7 years old, my son is 9. And I just think, you know, there's still a lot of that messaging going on that just kind of creates this whole diet culture that we are all in. But yeah, I like that. And I can, you know, me too. I was like, if I just work hard, if I just focus more, I'm going to figure this out. And so what happens then at age 49 and a half, what changes? Like, what's finally that aha moment or the, you know, light bulb moment for you that changes stuff?
Well, you know, there was a big light bulb aha moment that I cannot wait to describe. I'll tell you that my binging subsided to a degree, because hormonally in your 40s, you just can't get away with the same amount of binging that you did on sugar earlier days. So I started to kind of like think I had it under control, because my binges were smaller. You know, I started to notice how I felt, couldn't get away with it. It took me longer to recover. It took me longer to recover from my typical donut binge or ice cream or whatever it was.
I want to interrupt just for a second, because that's a good point, because I am 43 now in perimenopause and talking to other friends that are going through this too. And our bodies are changing, like even though we're not doing anything differently, like the hormone piece is so huge. Like you mentioned, you know, age 11 or 12, same with me. All of a sudden I started gaining weight at that age. Like what all that kind of sugar that I was eating kind of caught up with me, and I could, you know, finally see it on my body physically. And I feel like this same thing with people, you know, going through perimenopause, menopause, it's like going through puberty a second time. Like the hormone level, it's like the second puberty is like what I think of it as now. And I just want to kind of put that out there, because what works at one time, like you're even saying, what you could do in your 20s isn't going to work at other stages in your life. And even in recovery, I think that is also true. Even when you have found the plan that works for you, it is still going to kind of evolve, because you're going to change and your needs are going to change. So I just think something, you know, to keep paying attention to, because I have noticed that almost being 5 years sugar and flour free, I'm starting to have to shift a few things because my body is changing, and a lot of that that's hormonal based. So I just want to interject that in there, because I it's just so timely with what I'm feeling right now. But I think a lot of women resonate, you know, with that, and that frustration of maybe all of a sudden people that hadn't been overweight are suddenly gaining weight, and their usual tactics, you know, are just no longer working. So
I love that. I'm going to write that down, what you said about second puberty. It really it is. Now we're older and we're wiser, and there's an opportunity there for us to become intuitive with ourselves, with our spirit, with our mind, with our body. There's an opportunity there to start listening in and recognizing the signs that we're getting, because that's part of the ticket out of this.
And working with our bodies instead of battling against it. Yeah. Like I think that's so important too. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, in terms of general self-care and our relationship with food, which I'll get to in a second here, it's definitely different through the decades. Like, it's different for me now. I'm 52 now. It's different than when I was 42 by far. And it's just, you know, there's so much freedom when you start to notice and to tune in to what the body is really asking for. And there's some healing in that, really. But going back to what you asked me about, when did the light bulb go off? So 2020, January 2020, I had set once again, just anybody else out there listening, if you get to the end of December like me and you don't go to the New Year's party because you're too bloated, disgusted, and sick. You've binged so hard on the food, the wine, whatever it is. You don't want another decadent meal New Year's Eve because you're strategizing your diet that's going to start the next day. Okay. A lot of us do that. And that was me, no different. I didn't know any different, you know, and I had written out my goals January 2020. At the time I was working in fitness full-time, I owned a personal training studio of my very own. Okay. And I was working very, very hard, and I was almost panicked that I was turning 50 in May of 2020. So the goals were like, okay, I'm going to achieve, I can still picture myself writing these goals, my best self in 2020 when I turn 50, because it's now or never. Now, what I meant was, I need to figure out why I'm binging on sugar. I need to get a grip on this. But what I wrote down was achieve my goal weight of 130 pounds. It was always 130 pounds. Why? Because that's what the doctor said, according to my height and frame, all that. 130 was like the number for me. Wasn't anywhere near. I'm still not anywhere near that. Anyway, so that was the main goal, is to, and I'm going to weigh myself every week. I'm going to lose 1 pound per week and eat all of these like perfectly clean foods. It was like, here we go again. Nothing was different. Willpower. I thought, okay, I really mean it this time. Whatever. So you can guess how that went down. Here we go. January 2020, always usually hardcore. I'm miserable. I'm making progress, but I'm miserable. Super Bowl Sunday shows up, and then the fun foods are there. And then I start remembering what it tastes, and I'm confused. I start to lose focus. Even like I'm a fitness pro here, and I'm losing focus with the imposter syndrome, the shame. I should walk my talk and do it better than everybody else because I'm expected to, I guess. I don't know. Pandemic hits. March 2020. Okay. And I told you how my binges had gotten smaller because my body really couldn't handle it. Well, let me just tell you, just like everybody else, we went into lockdown. I was forced to close my business and I was forced to be alone with me and not run and push and live on that hamster wheel, that treadmill of life, without checking in, without examining my thoughts, that I was alone. And with all of these fears and worries about everything, and I went down that rabbit hole of binging really hard, like I was 15 again. Ice cream for dinner every night for 2 weeks, plus anything else, anything I wanted. It was just like a big middle finger up to the world. And I couldn't get a grip on that. I could not get a grip on that. And I finally, after one last, I'm talking like not one pint here, Sayo. It was like 2 pints plus whatever else my husband had. And I had given up on myself. I felt like I gave up on myself and I was scared. So I was watching an episode of Dr. Phil one afternoon on the couch, and I was just disgusted with myself on every level. And Dr. Phil was interviewing on Zoom, right? On Zoom, these women, it looked like Hollywood Squares. It was Dr. Phil and three women in blocks on Zoom, interviewing them about their challenges in pandemic. And they had different challenges. One was abusing alcohol. One was scared to death financially. The other one was binge eating. And Dr. Phil said, in his own eloquent way, he was asking these women to consider, what could you do right now with what's available to you right now to come out stronger when this thing's over? And that just did something to me. And that is where I found Danielle Dame, because it was like, I'll never forget this. I felt like God was taking me and like shaking me gently like a rag doll, like just shaking, like, Tracy, I've been trying to get your attention your whole life. The time is now. And it's really emotional because I remember thinking, okay, I can either keep pushing and it's going to kill me doing it my way, or I can say, you know what? I don't have the answers. Help me. And so I did. And so I realized that I don't have all the answers, and I did have a problem. And so I hired my own coach, and it was great. And she like saved my life,
because she taught me what I was missing. And that was Danielle Dame.
Dr. Phil and Danielle Dame, the combo together, life-changing aha moment of, yeah. And, you know, and I love this because I'm, you know, huge fan of Dani. She's been on the podcast too and has her own podcast now about this. And was that really the first time for you, just out of curiosity, that someone kind of spoke and addressed all of these things to you that you had, you know, were struggling with that you just didn't realize, even just the thought of things like emotional eating and sugar addiction? Was it kind of like the first time you were in a situation with other people that were very much, you know, struggling with the same things?
Yes. So this is where, like, I had the imposter syndrome going and I wore a mask to the world in my local work and my, with my local clientele that, like, well, I'm this fitness chick. I walk my talk all the time, but I felt so dark with this like sugar binge secret. When I met Danielle and I met these other, it was a small group of ladies, which was perfect for me. They were like in Canada. They were all over the place. There was nobody directly in front of me and they didn't know me from the man on the moon. I was able to take that mask off and be myself and to just fully be open to answer the questions Danielle was asking us. And you know, it's funny because she'll call me her star student because, you know, I paid for my own coach. And that was the first time I had ever done that because I thought, oh, I've got all the answers. When I realized I didn't, it was almost so refreshing to know that somebody else can actually, she gave me the space to talk about this. I didn't mm-hmm. talk about this with anybody. And when I had that space and I started answering the, I was open to what she was asking me. She helped me discover the tools that I didn't know I had. Mm-hmm. And it had everything to, I thought it was about the food. It wasn't about the food. It was about my relationship with myself and how disconnected and disembodied I was living my whole life. And I didn't realize that I had so much shame and all these limiting beliefs and all of this trapped emotion. She then, Sayo, in my work with Dani, she brings you on for a masterclass one day. And I thought, oh my gosh, what is this emotion code stuff? And I was really intrigued. And so I did some sessions with you. And when I discovered what was like, what I was holding down, it's like a little inner tube of emotion. I was trying to keep it under the water and not let it out for so long in my life. So between you and the sessions, helping me pinpoint my roots of pain in my life, Danielle was helping me do the same thing. When I discovered that and I learned how to work through that, when I was doing the emotion code with you, I was like in the eye of the hurricane with discovering what was calling for attention within my spirit and my life and where I came from. And it was the most healing thing ever. And that helped me discover I have something to say. I've got to put this in writing. So that is when I poured my heart and soul into writing The Diet Free Diva, when I discovered that a big root of my pain began at the ginger age of 11, 12, when I started the toxic dieting, when I bought into the culture, when I believed I wasn't enough. And I actually got a little productively pissed about how much of my life I spent in that chase. So now I closed my personal training business. I moved out of training women in exercise into training women in holistic health, mainly debunking the myth that dieting is our solution to everything, because it's actually the anti-solution to anything in our lives. So that is kind of really where I found my healing. And I was able to take my passion and the energy that I have in my heart and channel it into writing this book.
Oh, I love that so much. It's just so beautiful and shows you when you, I think coaches are so important. You know, yes, you can do this on your own. I did a lot on my own, but I have a lot of, I see emotion code practitioner to help me. I have a lot of other people. And I think, like you said, sometimes it's just creating that space for you to discover all the stuff that's already within yourself. So to have that with the combination of those emotion code sessions, pinpointing, you know, that was just a part of your recovery and growth. I just love that so much. And then really realizing, oh my gosh, I have this gift I need to share with other people. I have to write this book and help other women. Because the other thing, like, and I think you mentioned that in the intro too, is like, you help women connect to their inner diva, who they're meant to be when they're not fighting with diets. And I talk about this a lot too, is So many women, I don't care if you're a sugar addict or not, so many women are unhappy with their body, have dieted at some point or will diet, and spend so much of our time and energy focused on what to eat or not to eat or how we look and does this make me look fat. And if we could channel all of that into more productive things, I mean, just think of what an amazing world this would be, right? Like, I just think women are such powerhouses. And if we were able to have kind of full access on a daily basis to all of our mental capacity, because we aren't stressed about food or how we look, like the world would just be a better place. I'm just going to say that. I know I see that in my own life now that I'm not obsessed about, am I going to be good today? Am I going to be bad? Am I, you know, I have just so much more time and energy to put into things that are really fulfilling and rewarding. So I love that. And that's something I see this transformation now in you too. It's like, you know, get away from that guilt and shame. And this just the diet mentality. And that's why I love this book. You're just kind of breaking free, you know, from all of that and really discovering what's that inside of you, kind of your own inner light that you're now like turning on. So I just think that's so, so beautiful. And I'm sure you just feel so grateful for how things all align to make it happen in that time. Like, and this is where, the pandemic, I think for a lot of people, was kind of that opportunity. And I know that's been one of the hardest parts of my recovery. There was a moment that I was in like the store early recovery and I picked up a chocolate bar and I was like, I could really down this right now. But kind of like Dr. Phil said, in my head, I was like, I can either come out of this like even healthier, or I can really downward spiral here. So I had made that choice in that moment. I'm going to come out, you know, on the other end of this stronger. And I just think it was an opportunity for a lot of people to have even the time to do some of this inner work that you did, because that is, like you even said, so little about this is about the food. It's about all the other stuff and the understanding of your relationship with the food. So I just love how that happened for you. And so glad that the emotion code had even a small part in your journey. So you decided to write this book, which is now available. And I'm just, with our time left, you know, we still have about like 15, 20 minutes left. I'd love for you just to kind of walk us through some of these five steps that have helped you so much transform your life, and just kind of go through them a little bit with us.
Oh, sure. Sayo, and you know, to your point of something that you said a few minutes ago, I encourage all women that are listening right now to ponder the concept that you brought up, which is, think of all the emotional energy and the mental space, like think of all of that, of our precious life that we have given in this chase, in this war with food, body, and ourselves. I mean, the whole diet culture just, it really sucks the life out of us. And if you know, one of the things that stopped me dead in my tracks as I was doing this inner work with you and with Danny and helping, you know, to discover like, well, you know, what is going on here? When I realized how much of my precious life I had given away to the chase with my food restriction dieting plan, whatever was going on at the time, I thought, wow, you know, was I put on this earth to just go on another restricted eating plan to lose, to get to the 130 that somebody said that I needed to weigh? Like, is this it for me? Is this the substance of my life? And I thought, no, that's not. So I really, the passion for me writing this book, in fact, the Diet Free Diva means who we as women are when we take back our natural born intuition with food. We need help to get there, but it can be done. When we discover who we are, when we have peace with food, then all of a sudden the light bulb comes on with like, hey, you know what? That thing that I know I do really well, that I've been putting on the back burner until I lose the weight, that's done. That comes off the back burner. It's on the front burner. And when we do what we were meant to do in our lives as our reason for being alive, the world becomes a better place. And we feel a heck of a lot more fulfilled in our lives when we give ourselves the space to do that, when we end this war with food and our body. I mean, ladies, I know, you know, we all want to look good and we want to feel good, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know, but we want to do that on our terms.
not diet culture terms. So the diet free diva starts with, you know, the first step. Let me just go through this really, really quickly. I talked about my story, right? All of you that are listening, and Sayo, you as well, we have a food story, each of us individually, and it's different for all of us. I was describing when I was 4 years old, I wanted the extra cake at the birthday party. I mean, all those things. I talked about when I started my first diet, my high school disaster with food and my secret binges and how I restrict. We all have a food story related to our eating habits, our dieting past, our body image challenges. Not all women have had those, but arguably, I think most of them have. You know, what does that look like for you? So step one, discover and write your food story. And I offer some suggestions as to how to do that. We can't just say, okay, well, where do I start? I help you get started with some wonderful prompting questions. And you know, it's funny. I cried when I wrote it and I cry when I read it. You go back and you read where you came from. And I give some wonderful guidelines on how to discover and write your food story. That's step one. And step two is all about us discovering who are we really, not who we should be. So there is an opportunity to discover and locate your top values. What are your top three values? In other words, not what the world thinks you should be doing or what the world says should be important to you, not what your spouse says, what should be important to you or your boss or anybody else in your life. I show you a pathway to identify what's really important to you, because once you know that, you start to connect with your inner wisdom. That helps you write your why for breaking away from diet culture. So you heard the word why, you know, find your why for moving forward with this particular pathway. It's that important. And I show you loving guiding steps as to how to get there. That's step two. Step three is where we learn how to be more mindful of what's going on up here in our heads, to recognize that we have two voices, an inner critic and an inner loving coach that we can give power to now. Take power away from the critic. Identify when the critical talk is going on. We talk a lot about how to become mindful. I never knew how to do that, but I know now, and I really give some simple ways to discover that. And I also go through something called a personal inquiry. When we're craving chocolate, like what you did during pandemic, Sayo, there was an opportunity for you to eat that chocolate bar, but you didn't, because you did an inquiry on terms your way that saved you from the knee-jerk reaction that used to take place when the chocolate showed up. So I talk about how to get through that, which helps us stay on course and keep our promises to ourselves. And step four, we finally talk a little bit about food. There is no food plan. There is no meal plan. I am not qualified to give anybody a meal plan. And I would question if anybody should be giving you a meal plan, because deep inside, you know what to eat. You know what you like to eat. And I help guide you towards your inner wisdom and your appetite for wholesome, unprocessed, natural foods, because we have to get the junk out. We cannot heal a relationship with food and dieting until we get unprocessed sugars, refined flours, and things like that out of the body, so we can you know, steer clear of that and see through the fog. So I talk about a 14-day whole foods cleanup experiment. It's not a diet. It's helping you clean up, starting with your brain chemistry, from the diet foods, the protein bars, all the false foods that are out there that have hijacked our tongue. Finally, step five, I teach you how there are a few different things going on in step five, but I teach you how to create your own path of excellence with your choices as they relate to food and body. I talk a little bit about exercise in there. I also give you some tools as to how to navigate and keep your promises to yourself with your newfound habits in a society that is begging you to buy their thing, try this next popular diet, go through the Dunkin' Donuts, all that stuff. How to put on what I call special glasses and bring in special mantras to stay in your lane and remember to keep your promises, because we have to know how to get through the world doing things that are a little unpopular to garner our best health and to not buy into toxic diet culture. And once you discover your very own path of excellence, that means you know what works for you with your habits, especially as they're related to food, then guess what?
you're living your best diva life because you've taken back your self-trust. You know who you are and you know what you want out of your life, and everybody better get out of your way because here you come.
I love that so much. And I love this path of excellence that you, you know, refer to, because what I'm hearing and what I really like about the book, and you even have, you can go to your website, which I'm going to link, because you have a workbook, a free downloadable printable workbook to go through these 5 steps of becoming a diet-free diva. It's the personalization of making it work for you, right? And that's what makes it sustainable. You know, I think so many times we try to do, well, that works for this person, whatever. But this is really, like you said, this inner, and I think you said like that self-inquiry, it's really looking at yourself and making the plan, this path of excellence that is going to serve you. And your path of excellence is going to look different from mine. That's going to look different from someone else's. And I think that's really the freedom part, you know, finding what works for you, what's sustainable for you. And that's going to look different for everybody. So I love that you basically are, you know, creating this workbook and guide for people to do that. So I just am so grateful for you for creating this. I think a lot of what you said, I'm sure, is really resonating with people. And I'm just curious now that, you know, the book is out, you're helping women. How just has you seen your own life transform now from where you were maybe, you know, March 2020 to where you are now, you know, over 2 years later?
Wow. You know what, as what's coming up for me, listening to you ask me that question, is I feel like, now I mentioned I'm 52 now, I have matured, Sayo. I have matured more in the last 2 years than I have in the last probably 20. Because when we diet, we're stuck in this archetype mode. I talk about this in the book, of a princess. Am I good enough? Is my body good enough? Do I weigh what I'm supposed to weigh so then I'll be enough? When we break free from the toxic diet programming that we hear all the time, well, I'm not going to be good enough unless I weigh 130 pounds. Really? Says who? We can elevate into what I call queen, which is the mature version of us. And it feels good. And if I can even help one other woman get out of that war of that programming that they were bought into, it's not our fault that we took on those beliefs. It's been shoved in our face. If I can help just one woman take back their free spirit to live life on their terms and be able to look at that, see the next diet that's going to come out in 6 months and say, oh, here we go. I see what that is. And to understand that they can change how they talk to themselves as a way out to build that confidence, that they can actually trust themselves in their lives. It's the most freeing thing ever to be mature in terms of, I finally can trust myself again, if ever, for the first time, you know, and that feels pretty good.
In such a much more peaceful way to live, you know, like out of that diet battle. So yeah, I mean, you just look so peaceful and, you know, you kind of radiate that just happiness. And I think that is so, I mean, for me, a lot of it was about weight loss in the beginning. And now that's not even, it's more just the freedom that you're talking about that is really the gift. So I'm so grateful to you for writing this book. How do we get in touch with you? Like, what's the best way to find you?
Yeah. So my website is www.theholisticdivas.com. And there is a way to contact me. At the top, there's a link to contact me. My email is there. And also, I encourage everyone, the link to my book is on my website, where it'll hook you right into Amazon. I have Kindle and I have paperback. I'm also recording Audible right now that'll be out in a few months. I'm super excited. In my own voice. And then, you know, get your free workbook. As soon as you go on my website, you'll see an opportunity to download your free workbook that helps you get started. And it's free. It helps you get started on the 5 steps, starting with food story. And it's kind of a fun little thing to get you rolling in the right direction. And you also said something, Sayo, that I want to touch on. I didn't mention anything about weight loss here. But what I can say is, for anybody listening, I understand if you have unwanted pounds that you want to shed, it's amazing when you read the book You start doing the work and you discover your path of excellence and start working those steps for yourself. And we take the focus off the scale and off the weight. It's amazing how those unwanted pounds will go about their way when we shift our focus off of diets and off the scale. And that happened to me definitely here. And anybody that's like, okay, well, I have weight to lose, this is a new way of seeing those results.
Yeah, I love that and totally agree. So any last words of advice or wisdom just to leave us with today, anything else maybe, or that we just didn't get to today that you wanted to cover? I know the time always goes so quickly.
I just want to encourage any woman that's listening out there. And by the way, my husband read this book. It's hot pink and it's all, you know, very, very diva-esque. And my husband sat down and read it in like a few hours. And he said, you know, you could have written this for men too. And I said, I know, but I wrote it for women. I would really have to say, be open and curious. Read the book, be open and curious, and start envisioning what your life might be like if you weren't fighting with food all the time, and just envision what that might look like, because we can all get there. It's just a matter of shifting, blocking out the noise of society and being open to ways that are smarter, that are truthful, and that quite frankly are free. They are free. We have it. And you just need someone like me and someone like you, Sayo, to help us discover where that power is. And it definitely, definitely can be done with an open mind and with thinking about, you know, relationship with food a little differently now.
Love that so much. Thank you. So wonderful having you on today. Thank you so much for writing this book, and we'll be sure to share all the details in the episode notes. So thank you again, Tracy, so much.
Great. Thank you, Sayo, and everyone listening. It was such an honor to be here.
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.